Hail the East. Powers of water. Powers of sensitivity, emotion, and response. We are wet with you. We taste you. We know you.
So much of patriarchal religions is dualistic. The deity, the sacred, is out there somewhere, and it's definitely not in you. Whereas the story that we tell here is that the sacred is in the earth, and we come out of the earth. So it's an ecological story. It enables ecological reconnection.
A lot of pagan religions are polytheistic. As part of that, people need to take more responsibility for themselves and what they do in the world. There's not a god saying to you, this is right and that's wrong. Paganism is very much about finding your own path that works for you in relationship with other people and the world around you.
It's a rather clever reworking of selective ideas and images from the ancient world put to thoroughly modern uses, which is why it's popular and which is why it's worked so well. Whether or not it's real in the sense that there are pagan goddesses and gods out there who are contacting worshippers and working with them, no scholar can actually say.
Partly because of the sort of interest in environmentalism and nature and animals, that some pagan beliefs are just sort of permeating the culture in a way that they weren't before. And I think some of that comes along with the broader recognition of paganism as a religion.
Drumming, invoking ancient goddesses, full moon rituals, spells, and incantations. These are all aspects of contemporary pagan religious practice. Hello and welcome to Encounter on ABC Radio National. I'm Masako Fukui. And in today's program, we'll talk to practicing Australian pagans and explore why the phases of the moon, the change of the seasons, or the Greek goddess Persephone's descent into the underworld has such spiritual resonance for pagans. As a group, pagans have a low profile, partly because they tend to be quite secretive, but mostly because there are so few of them. Only 1 in 1,000 Australians identify as pagan, which is about half the number of Mormons and twice the number of Brethren. And while all pagans revere nature, how they do this is incredibly diverse. It seems no two pagans are alike. For these reasons, paganism, like most minority religions, is often misunderstood or viewed with some suspicion. While many indigenous peoples in North America or Australia, for example, could also be broadly called pagans, the paganism we'll explore today is what some call neo-paganism, a relatively new religion that attempts to rediscover or reclaim pre-Christian traditions. But this inversion of the Judeo-Christian triumph over the pagan religions of the Celts, Greeks, or Romans questions some basic assumptions about Western society and is therefore a major source of tension between pagans and non-pagans. So how do contemporary pagans practice religion? Are Australian Wiccans, Druids, or shamans really all that different? Who are these pagans among us?
Hail the North, powers of fire. Powers of passion, shaping and integration.
My name is Glenys Livingstone and I have teacher training, studies in theology and philosophy, and most recently from the University of Western Sydney in social ecology, my doctorate there. I was raised, I guess, as a Protestant, Protestant in country Queensland. I guess I was always very interested in religion. So I actually became a Catholic when I was about 17, whenever all my friends were leaving. And I guess what I liked about the Catholicism is that people generally weren't just nominal Catholics. They really participated and were serious. So I was serious. So that's the path I took. And then I went on to study theology. I did that in Berkeley, California, at the Jesuit School of Theology. So part of the way through that theology degree, I felt that most religious practice was deeply patriarchal and a betrayal of myself as a woman. It's completely cerebral, and it's dogmatic. I know that there are many people within those religious traditions, of course, who find the deeper layers and the mystical layers. But generally speaking, those religious practices are not related to the place at all.
What do you mean by place? Do you mean geography?
Very much geography, really. The earth, related to the earth. So it was in the midst of that theology study that I made a transition out of the Christian paradigm. That was largely through the work of Mary Daly, who wrote the book Beyond God the Father. And then I learned from Starhawk about the earth-based tradition of old Europe. I guess my practice began in the late 80s. I celebrated the winter solstice for the first time here in Australia. I realised that it was a very powerful thing to be doing, to align oneself with the creativity.
This is the time of winter solstice in our southern hemisphere. Earth's tilt leans us away from the sun to the furthest point at this time in our annual orbit. This is, for us, the time when the dark part of the day is longest. Darkness reaches her fullness. She spreads her cloak and yet gives way and moves back into light. The breath of nature in our part of the world is suspended. She rests. We wait within the cauldron, the dark space, for the transformation.
Glenys Livingstone is creator, practitioner, and teacher over the internet of an earth-based goddess religion called Pagan Cosmology. And her conversion from Protestant Queensland girl to pagan cosmologist is quite typical of contemporary Australian pagans, according to Associate Professor Douglas Ezzie of the University of Tasmania. He's been studying witchcraft and paganism in Australia for the past decade, and he's himself a pagan.
There's a broad range of factors that are encouraging people to look towards witchcraft and paganism. Feminism is one, concern for the environment and magical realism is another that you get in, you know, Christianity or movies like Avatar. The conversion narratives in witchcraft and paganism are different to what you get in Christianity. Christian conversion narratives tend to be something like, you know, I was lost, I was misguided, I was doing these horrible and bad things, and then I found Jesus. Whereas witches, you ask them when they became a witch, and they'll say something like, well, I was always a witch, or I was always a pagan, I just didn't know it. So they'll say things like, you know, I believed that men and women were equal, I believed that nature was sacred, you know, I believed that it was important for us to find our own truth and our own experience. And then when I found witchcraft and paganism, it just rang true for me.
So is it very similar to the New Age movement where people kind of look to something inside themselves?
There's certainly overlaps between the New Age and pagans and witchcraft, although they're quite different in important ways. The New Age tends to be more focused on the self, whereas paganism and witchcraft has quite a bit of ritual. I think witchcraft and paganism also tends to be very oriented towards nature. So it takes people out of themselves into an engagement with nature, with the world around them.
The stories of old tell of the Great Mother giving birth to the divine child on this night. This divine child is the new being in you, in me, is the bringer of hope, the light in the darkness, the evergreen tree, the centre, which is also the circumference, all of manifestation. The divine child being born is the miracle of being and the unimaginable more that we are becoming.
Typically, pagan rituals are held at ecologically significant times, the full moon, the solstices or the equinoxes, or what's called the wheel of the year. In Australia, the seasons are opposite to that of the Northern Hemisphere, so the wheel of the year is celebrated either 6 months ahead or behind, depending on your viewpoint, and this remains an ongoing issue for some Southern Hemisphere pagans. In most rituals, a sacred circle is drawn by invoking the four elements, air, fire, water, and earth, and sometimes deities from Greek, Roman, Babylonian, Indian, or any number of traditions can also be invoked. Often candles or a fire is lit, dancing, singing, spellcraft might be involved, and an ancient myth may be reenacted, like a pantomime, where the mood can be playful or somber.
My becoming a Catholic was good pagan training because I learned about ritual and ceremony there. And really, I think that's what holds a lot of people there, because I think that's what the human loves to do. Brian Swim and Thomas Berry, who are two of my teachers, say that fish swim, birds fly, and humans do ritual. And ritual is a space, a sacred space, that enables one to deepen into something of what this moment is, and not to miss this moment, because so much of our lives are busy and lived in what people call real time and space, but is actually not. It's only an aspect of real time and space.
So is it the meditation process? Is it chanting?
Things like chanting, music, the aesthetics of a ritual. It's poetry. We need images and metaphors. I regard ritual as kind of an invitation into a poem.
And when it comes to poetic metaphors, stories of goddesses are popular in rituals. Suzanne Naseby practices witchcraft and runs Covenstead, a women's only Wiccan coven in Sydney. She often creates rituals which rely on the stories of ancient goddesses, like this one.
One time where the women were going into themselves and questioning their relationship with themselves. And part of the ritual I recreated was that they were led to a closed-in pergola to go and meet Aphrodite. And when they got there, there was a mirror with candles all lit, and it was a beautiful space and flowers. And it's all very ritualistic, and they go there, and then they are surprised when they said they're going to meet Aphrodite, and they meet themselves, because that's the beauty of it, because we are beauty, we are Aphrodite, we are the gods and the goddesses, you know, in that sense. We can do things like spill the salt and throw some over our shoulder. And I believe that superstitions are really rituals without meaning, without understanding where they come from or why we're doing it. Because a ritual has meaning and intent beyond the action. It has a deeper meaning. And the soul communicates with symbolism. It doesn't relate to language, because that's a fairly new invention of ours, you know. So ritual is really doing symbolism, doing myth. And in that sense, when we know the myth of something, then we know the meaning. If we knew the myth or the story behind why we throw salt over our shoulder, then this throwing the salt over the shoulder becomes ritualistic and very meaningful.
I think it's very important, the story that one is telling and the metaphor that is used. So much of patriarchal religions is dualistic. The deity, the sacred, is out there somewhere, and it's definitely not in you. And you need to be saved. Whereas the story that we tell here is that the sacred is in the earth, and we come out of the earth. We're part of that. We participate. So there's a realization that one participates in the whole innate creativity, which is innate to us, it's innate to the earth, it's innate to the cosmos, it's not out there somewhere, we are immersed in it. That's one of the main differences. That's the story that is being told is very different. So it's an ecological story, it enables ecological reconnection.
Hail the West and powers of Earth. Powers of presence, memory, and action. We hold all the stories of you in our bodies. We feel your weight. We know you.
Most pagan practice is solitary and centered around a private altar, but small groups also get together regularly, and festivals that involve hundreds are held at significant seasonal times of the year. But all or none of these could be part of one's pagan practice, which makes paganism a very fluid religion.
Powers of perception, awareness, and inspiration.
We've tended to define religion in terms of a monotheistic belief in God, but that's really not that common. You know, when you look at the big religious traditions of India or the indigenous religious traditions of China, indigenous peoples around the world, there's not that belief in a monotheistic deity, and it's much more concerned with experience. And religion is not about belief, it's about ritual practice that allows people to find their place in the world, to engage in relationships. You know, for example, the Native Americans had lots of ritual that was associated with the buffalo. Now, so, and that allowed them to engage in relationship with the buffalo. Or in Australia, the Aboriginals had rituals around their various totem animals. I think in the West, we've misunderstood ritual. We've thought of ritual as something boring and you know, sort of where you just go through the motions. But witches use ritual to work with their emotions. Ritual is a deliberate way of trying to change the way that they feel about things. So if they're feeling depressed or feeling that they're being treated as worthless, they'll use ritual as a way of trying to reclaim themselves, rediscover their confidence. So in that sense, these sorts of rituals are very much religious. To understand why they're here, to work with their emotions, I think the really important thing is that it then leads people to live different sorts of lives where they value the sorts of things that we might hope they value as religious people.
Associate Professor Douglas Ezzie of the University of Tasmania.
Ancient mother, goddess of all, deep within her sacred soil, I hear the ancestors call. I hear her call.
You're listening to Encounter on ABC Radio National, and today's program is called Pagans Among Us.
To bathe in her holy bath.
Myth and ritual have always been aspects of human life. Archaeological evidence from the Paleolithic period tells us that the Neanderthals engaged in spiritual make-believe to make sense of their world. Today, we still rely on mythology, whether it's in the form of religion, novels, opera, or theatre, to point us beyond everyday experience to the mystery of something timeless and universal. But while most world religions tend to have a unifying myth or myths, paganism lacks a source of authority. Professor Ronald Hutton is a professor of history at the University of Bristol and has authored histories of the Druids and the witches in the UK.
The earliest known modern pagan religion is Wicca, which is modern pagan witchcraft, and that appears in 1951. It seems to have developed in its present form in the 1940s, and the hardest efforts on anybody's part can't get it back further than that. And Wicca kind of sets the fashion for modern paganism. A lot of the ideas, a lot of the practices, and all the other forms of modern paganism that we can trace are more recent than Wicca.
So if it's that recent, then is it a revivalist religion, or is it a reimagining? Is it something completely new?
It's certainly a reimagining. Paganism is a clever reworking of selective ideas and images and figures from the ancient world put to thoroughly modern uses, which is why it's popular and which is why it's worked so well. Whether or not it's real in the sense that there are pagan goddesses and gods out there who are contacting worshippers and working with them, no scholar can actually say. That's for the deities themselves or the worshippers to discover.
What are the sources of authority for pagans?
The sources of authority lie very much in themselves. There are traditions in paganism of how you work, but they don't depend upon sacred texts. They don't depend on the idea that goddesses and gods give human beings rules and orders. They depend upon sets of rituals that enable those who practice them to get very often a very real sense of direct contact with the divine. Whereas religions of the book have traditionally said, this is what you should believe, paganism today tends to say, this is how you can encounter the divine. Now it's up to you to work out what you believe about it.
So is it okay for pagans to make up their own rituals?
It certainly is. Clearly they're more credible or easier to develop if they have some kind of relevance to the traditional rituals that have gone before. But creativity is a very large part of modern paganisms and indeed a very large part of their appeal.
I have learned from Caitlin and John Matthews, and I've learned from goddess scholars like Maria Jimbutas, who did a lot of the early research. But I am creating a new tradition. It's based on old European practice, but it's also drawing from contemporary Western scientific knowledge as well. So all of that is actually incorporated, that knowledge or that awareness of the unfolding of the universe, the evolution of the universe, is included in the way we celebrate the seasons. The seasons are simply expressing a creativity that's innate to the cosmos and has been there ever since the beginning. Mm. So I call my course that I teach Celebrating Cosmogenesis. Really, that's what we're doing in the seasonal wheel, is celebrating the unfolding of the cosmos. Most of what I do, though, is related to the old European traditions. The Demeter and Persephone story is very important, especially at the autumn equinox. It's kind of a replay and recreation, I suppose, of the Eleusinian mysteries. So it's mostly, you know, the Mediterranean, old European story, but none of them are excluded, really, because there's also a lot of Indian goddesses, and I'm always meeting new ones.
You see, I see paganism as the natural spiritual or religion of human beings. And in that sense, I think we are born with this connection to energy and to other animals and our environment and to the cosmos. All I do is I think I'm following in the footsteps of what millions of human beings have done over time.
So is there something, either a culture or a tradition, that you draw from?
I have English background, so some of the Celtic traditions and celebrations resonate with myself. I have Baltic sort of backgrounds as well, so I'm sort of interested in the shamanic, because the word shaman actually came from that area of the world. I see a lot, particularly the European traditions, fairly archetypal, so I might use Greek, Roman, Egyptian. It's really finding the archetype that speaks of my intent at that particular time.
Suzanne Naseby, who calls herself a shamanistic witch.
And there's a Mago tradition in Korea that I'm very attracted to. There's a goddess scholar who does a lot of work, but although I don't include her particular story. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, issue around appropriation of other people's traditions. And I feel a little bit like that here in Australia. I don't know a lot about the Aboriginal traditions. But I guess I'm pleased to be able to say that I bring my stories. And I think many of the Aboriginal elders are pleased when one has one's own stories and they want to learn from those when there's an exchange. Then, you know, I have my spiritual heritage. I don't need to steal theirs.
Glenys Livingstone, creator of an earth-based goddess religion called Pagan Cosmology.
Within witchcraft and paganism, you will find a little bit of appropriation of indigenous traditions like the Native American or Aboriginals. Witchcraft and paganism tends to try and recreate religions like, you know, drawing on ancient Greece or the Norse traditions or some of the heathen traditions of pre-Christian England, for example. That being said, within the broader New Age movement, there are, you know, neo-shamans and people doing sweat lodges and those sorts of things. There's problematic aspects to that in terms of appropriation and using those traditions without appropriate respect for the owners of those traditions, particularly when they're living traditions. But I really don't think it's all that common within contemporary paganism and witchcraft, at least my experience of it.
But there is this kind of mishmash of sources, isn't there? For example,
indeed,
you know, you take a Greek myth like Persephone, and then you might invoke a Celtic myth or even Kali. So how do you know that the experience that you have in a ritual that takes its sources from a variety of different cultures is authentic?
Most religious traditions are eclectic. So the idea that there's sort of one pure Christian tradition even, there's a huge variety within that. You know, they incorporate aspects of Greek thought or Roman practice, for example. Within contemporary paganism, I think there's certainly more of that. You know, sometimes it's phases in people's lives or it's the type of issue that they're trying to make sense of. So there's potential for the eclecticism to become empty or superficial, but on the other hand, there's also potential to move different traditions as people confront new issues or try and make sense of new stages in their life or understand different aspects of the world around them.
Associate Professor Douglas Ezzie, author of Practicing the Witch's Craft, Real Magic Under a Southern Sky. Pagan Awareness Network, or PAN, is a non-profit organisation that aims to educate the public and advocate on pagan issues. The group has also held a ritual every full moon since 1997, and this particular ritual coincides with the spring equinox. There are about 30 people gathered on a hill in the Sydney suburb of Seven Hills. PAN founder and organiser David Garland explains the ritual.
Primarily it's just a stripped-down Wiccan ritual, very basic circle. We summon the four elements, earth, air, fire and water, the god and goddess. We create a sacred space, we do some meditation, we do a bit of energy raising. We share cakes and wine or cakes and apple juice because it's a public place and we don't have a liquor license. And then we go home, and that's once a month. Every month on the full moon.
Yes, and you've got the train line going right across you.
There's a reason that I picked this place, and people talk about ley lines and where circles exist in Europe and how, you know, Stonehenge and Tintagel and these other circles all exist on natural energy lines. Well, that's a natural energy flow of so much power running down those train lines. And behind us is a bus depot full of energy, again, man-made energy. This side we've got water. Even though it's a man-made river, and the hill we're standing on is what that river was. So they dug the dirt out and piled it here. And then across here is Seven Hills Road, which is a highway. So we've got four major energy lines surrounding where we are. But energy lines don't need to be natural. So it just made this point, this area, to me, an obvious place to run the full moon.
Now, Michael?
Michael?
Yes?
And Michael, how did you find tonight's ritual?
Tonight's ritual was good. It was about Ostara, which is bringing in the spring equinox.
And tonight, you were the stag in the ritual.
I was the stag, that's
so
right.
So what does
yes.
that mean?
The stag is the masculine energy in nature.
And so what did you have to do in the ritual as a stag?
Well, we welcome in, you know, the lady who was the maiden. She represents Ostara, which is spring. And the stag, you know, because he's quiet through winter, he looks forward to when she can return, because he can then come out of his cave and continue to hunt, continue to breed. I symbolise a great gratitude, because not everything survives through winter. So I survived winter because...
Because you're a masculine force.
Yeah, because I'm a masculine force.
So it was a celebration.
It was a celebration, yes.
So being the stag in this particular ritual, is that something special for you? Did you feel different?
Well, I did. I did. Like, when I was standing down there, I thought about the strength and, you know, the hunting ability and to be able to provide for my family, and to, you know, thinking about all the males in my family and what they've done in the past made me think that I'm just another link in that chain. And for that, that created pride. I don't know, it's just, as a man, I feel honoured to be given the role because I represent all that exists with every man that's in the world.
And Michael, how long have you been coming to these rituals?
I've been coming to these particular rituals for about 4 years now, but I've been a practicing magician since I was 12, and I'm 36 now, so that's quite a few years. I come from Austria, and I also was introduced to the craft by my mother. So for me, growing up with the pagan influence in my life wasn't strange for me, you know. The only time I'd find it strange was when I would go to school and yet I'd be celebrating Easter on a different, you know, Christian way, where they had no idea what the real meaning was, you know, behind this ancient pagan celebration. You know, I found it, you know, hard, but I had to stay silent because, you know, everybody has their own spiritual path, and, you know, as long as it all leads to a better world, then, you know, all for it, because that's what we're all about, yeah.
Thanks very much, Michael.
You're welcome. Shed to the wind till a skeleton claws
the sky. Given pagans are individualistic in their ritual practice and eclectic in the sources that they draw from, how they experience their religion is also diverse. Professor of History at Bristol University, Ronald Hutton.
Because there is no central dogma, you can have a bunch of people who work the same rituals together as pagans, but interpret them in totally different ways without any need for disagreement. To many pagans whom I have met, the deities are extremely real as any divine beings are to any worshippers of any religion in the world. To others, they are archetypes. So Venus, for example, stands for the force of love. Neptune for the power of the sea, to take Roman deity names. To others still, they are part of a collective unconscious. In other words, they're real forces, but they're created by human needs and desires. So you can have people who hold all these different attitudes in one relatively small group, coexisting without any tension.
So is that unique to paganism?
The answer to that is I'm not entirely sure, because I don't know enough about the whole spectrum of world religion, but certainly it's much more common and usual among paganism than other faiths in the Western world.
Yeah, so Mark Hepworth. I've been coming here for about 11 and a bit years now. My first one was in January 1999. I was so happy that the community was here for me. When I first came, as I'm sure you've heard the term, came out of the broom closet. So having the community here was such a great help to me. There are a great deal of negative stereotypes around what we do. I mean, hell, I just went and watched Wicked at the Capitol Theatre, and I'm sure that's what we all think we are. We're all green and fly around on brooms. But
so are you a witch?
I'm a Wiccan.
So what made you come out of the broom closet?
I got to a point in my life where things got very dark for me. I was contemplating my immortality and stuff like that, and I wasn't finding a lot of solace in the Protestant faith that I was brought up with. I tried being an atheist for 12 months and it just didn't sit with me. For me, there is some spiritual connection, especially between the land and, you know, I had such an affinity for water, and then it just seemed to resonate with me so completely. I ended up wanting to share that. I wanted to know that someone else had had that experience. So I started looking online and went to a website called The Witch's Voice, which is run out of Florida, I believe. And David Garland, who I'm sure you've spoken with, was the Australian contact for The Witch's Voice, and advertised this event on The Witch's Voice. So, yeah, January 99, I came out and haven't looked back since.
You're listening to a program about pagans on Encounter, abc.net.au/rn/encounter. Pagans are eclectic, and prefer to congregate in the vastness of cyberspace than in religious communities. So not surprisingly, they have one of the strongest religious presences on the internet. But if pagans do get together, there's often a shared sense of being different, of being outside the religious mainstream. And it's in small groups like this Pan Full Moon gathering, or in large festivals involving hundreds of participants, that a pagan religious identity is often reinforced. Dr. Sarah Pike of the University of California, Chico, is the author of Earthly Bodies, Magical Selves.
Festivals have often been a place to go and really express their religious selves. So, for instance, in the 19th century, evangelical Christians had camp meetings. There was a sense that they were leaving the world behind and going into a sacred space. They would have these meetings in the woods where they would, praise God and get saved and have religious experiences that were very different than the way they conducted themselves outside. So even a religion like Christianity that's often seen as so different than paganism, festivals have a very similar kind of atmosphere to them in terms of that opposition to the outside world of entering the festival space where you feel like you're together with like-minded other people and you have that sense of community.
Sometimes that ritual can be hidden, not out in the open.
I think that many pagans like the feeling of being special, of having something secret, something that has a magical and enchanted quality to it that might not be shared with everybody. And so somehow it's important to keep that personal and private and hidden. And yet the hiddenness is part of what attracts negative attention. It's an interesting tension that, you know, if you want a ritual to be private and then no one is supposed to talk about it afterwards, that creates a sense that, well, there must be something bad happening in it. But that's usually not the case. I mean, often it's very much about a personal journey. And I think that's the more positive read of the secrecy is the desire to create a space where people can experience a range of emotions in the ritual process, where they can grieve, where they can be angry, where they can feel sexy or they can feel powerful. And sometimes that means they need a sense of safety and security that what happens to them there isn't going to be talked about by other people. It's an interesting dilemma that contemporary pagans have to really create a sense of safe space and yet to also challenge the sort of stereotypes of, you know, the Satan worshipers and child sacrifice and all the kind of negative stereotypes that have been spread about pagans and Wiccans.
What I started out 13 years ago doing was wanting to make sure that my kids wouldn't suffer the discrimination that I did. You know, even tonight we had some yobbos chucking Exodus, which is uncommon, but it still happens. You know, when I started this, I had my car tires slashed, I had my windscreen smashed when I came out of the closet and announced that I was pagan. There was quite a bit of fallout. There was no protection in the workplace at that time, so I lost my job as well. So we still don't have a lot of the protections that we should in Australia for your religious choice, for freedom of religion. And we see it everywhere. It's not just us, it's any minority group or any religion that isn't considered to be the flavour at the time.
There are these stories of persecution that are, you know, they have a kind of life of their own. They get told and retold and they circulate in the community. And they seem to play an important role in kind of identifying, you know, who's us and who's them. I mean, they, in contemporary America, they tend to be Christians, conservative Christians who are, you know, have negative stereotypes about pagans and sometimes who have a history, even in recent times, of outright persecution. So, for instance, there was a case at an army base where there was a Wiccan circle. And this came out in 1999. This was in Texas, a very conservative state. A lot of local ministers were up in arms and talking about devil worshipers, and they needed to get Satan out of the military. And this story is still discussed in pagan communities as an example of persecution. And I think that desire to really turn the stereotypes on their head and say, well, the horned god is turned into Satan, but this is our deity and it's a positive force and it's related to nature. And so there's an opportunity to do these kinds of reversals that I think is very empowering and it does create a boundary. It does create a kind of opposition, a kind of us and them. And that's a discourse that is certainly promoted in some pagan communities still today. And it's fed by the kind of real stereotypes that are out there in popular culture and certainly among conservative Christians. So it's a boundary that moves a lot, I think.
Does it work the other way too? Do pagans criticize Christians and their religious practice?
There is a way in which some pagans, you know, distance themselves from their own pasts if they have rejected a Christian upbringing, as many of them have. It's a way of putting that behind them. It draws a boundary where there really might be more fluidity of identity. Maybe they are bringing some Christian values with them. So there is Christian bashing that goes on, and it serves personal and social or collective purposes. I think there's less of that now because many pagan leaders are trying to work in ecumenical groups. Interfaith are doing more to work with Christians than they were. So I think it's one of those things that's changing.
As a group of people, would you say that they're quite inclusive?
I think that paganism is a very inclusive religion, but there are certainly issues that come up that there's no agreement on. And again, one of those might be racial purity or heritage. There certainly are a lot of tensions between different groups. Probably one of the biggest ones is between Wiccans and some of the Norse religious groups, such as the Satru, particularly when some of the northern religious groups tend towards a kind of racial purity. And that's certainly not true for all of them. Most Wiccans would say they're inclusive. They would certainly welcome anyone from any racial or ethnic or class or gender identity background. But that means, you know, you still need to follow the rules of their particular tradition. So if it's a tradition that has specific initiations and a very set structure, you would have to be willing to follow their rules. The sky, hi. I'm alone in a forest
of memories. Well, we don't really have an identity because we're all individuals. getting pagans to agree on anything is almost impossible. So we just haven't managed to fit into what the government wants as a requirement for us to be a recognised nomination. The Attorney General's office has a criteria for you to become a recognised denomination so that you can have your own clergy, so you can have your own stuff like that, to get people who can, rather than going through celebrancy courses and stuff, you can appoint your own clergy. So you have to have 12 organised groups to agree to sign up under one mass umbrella group, and then the government will look at recognising that umbrella group and giving them the rights to bestow clergyship on whoever they wish under that group. And they've been trying to do it for at least the last 4 years that I know of, and it hasn't managed to get off the ground as yet.
Mm. But isn't part of being a pagan being different? And isn't that why people don't want to be in a group?
Yes, I would agree many of them believe that, but many of them also want the benefits that can come from having an organised denomination, like tax breaks and charitable status and stuff like that, so we can donate or have stuff donated to us and then do things with that for our community, whereas at the moment we just pay full price and we don't get tax write-offs, so any donations we get aren't, you know, deductible, unfortunately.
What about you?
I do want pagan old folk homes. I want to go to an old folks home and be able to be pushed around to circle, you know, and stuff like that. I don't want to be in an old folks home that's run by a church. And pretty much that's what's out there.
David Garland, founder of the Pagan Awareness Network. Pagan identity is notoriously hard to pin down. But rather than undermining it as a religion, it's just this fluidity that should fuel a growing interest in paganism in the future, according to Dr. Sarah Pike.
It seems to me a lot of pagan beliefs and practices are spreading out into the culture and are influencing all kinds of other movements and communities that wouldn't necessarily recognize themselves with the label of pagan or Wiccan. For instance, lots of the environmental activists who often label themselves as atheists draw from many pagan beliefs and practices, even including the pagan holidays. There's a way in which, partly because of the sort of interest in environmentalism and nature and animals, that some pagan beliefs are just sort of permeating the culture in a way that they weren't before. I think my sense is that the religious landscape of paganism is going to be really familiar and, you know, become more familiar. I don't really see it being institutionalized. I think there will be some, as I said, some groups that are institutionalized, but I imagine there'll be a constant resistance to that. So its boundaries will be kind of vague and ever-changing because of that desire to have something that's personally meaningful, the kind of self-realization and sort of eclecticism, very postmodern in that sense that, you know, the self is multiple and shifting and changing and that it will change over your lifetime, that you don't have sort of one static identity, that you can be, you know, maybe you're going to pull in a little Tibetan Buddhism next year and then the following year something else. So it is a dynamic religion in that sense. And I think it's not just in paganism that you have that kind of eclectic sense of self-identity.
Do you see that as a trend that's going to continue in the religious sphere in Western societies for some time?
Yes, I do think that will continue, and I think alongside of it is going to be a movement in the opposite direction, and that's to a more conservative, more stable, more bounded religious identity, whether that's Jewish or Christian or Muslim. I mean, we're certainly seeing that here in the U.S. on college campuses, for example, which, you know, certainly one area to kind of look when you're predicting the future. You know, we see students become attractive to these sort of free-floating religions like Buddhism and, you know, or Western versions of Buddhism and paganism and New Age. And then we see other students that are very attracted to more sort of orthodox forms of Judaism or Christianity that give you a stricter set of guidelines for living your life than contemporary paganism does.
Sarah Pike of the University of California, Chico. You've been listening to Encounter on ABC Radio National. Today's program was called Pagans Among Us. In today's program, you heard the voices of Glynis Livingstone, Douglas Ezzy, Suzanne Naseby, Ronald Hutton, Sarah Pike, David Garland, and the members of the Pagan Awareness Network. A special thanks to them. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn/encounter, where you can post a comment about the program and also find podcast and streaming audio links so you can listen to the program at any time. The sound engineer was Phil McKellar. Thanks for listening. I'm Masako Fukui.
Can you say in Singapore, where the job of the media is not to criticise, but to take part in the process of nation building?
All the TV stations, all our newspapers, radio stations are all run by one company owned by the government.
But as one of the most wired nations in the world, the emerging new media is shaking things up.
The power of the internet has actually taken the PAP by surprise.
What Can I Say in Singapore? You can download this 360 documentary from the Radio National website.